The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
I'm joined in studio by Teresa Fallon, who's director of the Center for Russia, Europe, Asia Studies, which is the acronym is CRAS. CRIAS, you like to call it, because we want to talk about China and Russia and the threats to the transatlantic alliance, as well as talking about other matters like Ukraine. And we'll start, Teresa, with Ukraine, for instance. We know that the Russians have been targeting the energy infrastructure. Is that what they're doing now? Is that their principal aim, to bring Ukraine to its knees?
Well, we've seen horrific attacks by Russia on hospitals, schools, and the energy infrastructure. So this winter will be very difficult for the Ukrainians. And the Russians are definitely posing a threat to that, as well as the nuclear plants.
Because it will demoralize, obviously, the population if they're cold, if they're hungry, if they've no light, if their schools are closed, if there's no medical help, they will become demoralized.
Exactly. That's the strategy.
What about the Ukrainian strategy of going into Kursk and also pegging a few drones at Moscow even?
Well, I think it really lifted spirits, because war is also about lifting morale of the people, because people were really becoming very demoralized in Ukraine. So the movement into Kursk, we don't know how it's going to end eventually, but I think it actually really promoted a morale boost for the Ukrainians. So that was a big plus. And it also gave the Ukrainians, they filled their kitty of soldiers, so they had exchanged very quickly their Russian soldiers for other Ukrainian soldiers.
I always find that kind of bizarre, a bit like in Gaza, where, you know, they were vaccinating children by day against measles, or polio rather, and then bombing them by night.
I know.
And here you have soldiers who are being exchanged for each other only to shoot at each other again.
It's terrible.
And very difficult to comprehend on any level. Now, the debate in Washington and in London about the permitting the Ukrainians to use long-range missiles from Ukraine aimed at Russian territory, where do you think that is going to go?
Well, the UK has really already said that they were free to use the long-range missiles in Russia. Nevertheless, with the Blinken-Lamy visit last week to Kiev, everyone was expecting that the US, there was high hopes that the US would lift. But because this could result in a NATO problem, the Biden administration has been extremely cautious. Now, we see the U.S. military and the U.S. government are really at odds on this. On September 10th, right before this meeting took place on September 11th in Kiev, there was a long group of former Supreme Allied Commanders Europe, U.S. diplomats, congresspeople, signed this, please let Ukraine protect themselves. So there's been a great movement to finally get these weapon systems to Ukraine, but they're fighting with one hand tied behind their back because they're not allowed to use them to go at distance. And Putin understands that he's been using the nuclear threat, which has really made all these governments kind of...
I mean, some of the noises from Moscow about what is one of the jewels of, if you like, the old Russian crown, which is the city of Kyiv, would be just a melted emptiness. They'd nuke it.
But then everybody, who would support Russia after that? And I think that they are rattling the cage so that some people don't even believe it anymore. But every time when they said, if you give them tanks, we might use nuclear weapons. And then the West gave Ukraine tanks. So it keeps moving up. And you mentioned about the drones. Drones fly far... they take much longer. They move very slowly compared to these.
They're easily targeted, but maybe harder to see.
Right. But the Ukrainians have been manufacturing them themselves, and so they can't be told not to use these. And last week, a Russian woman died in an attack in a suburb outside of Moscow. But that means that these have to travel thousands of kilometers, and the Russians aren't able to detect them. So the Ukrainians are sending these drones to airfields, to weapons depots, and as a form of defense, because as long as Russia can attack them from these places. And Russia's expecting that the U.S. will lift the, because they've already moved their troops, their equipment, about 90 miles back. So we've seen, the Russian expectation of this happening. And Putin has tried a new tact. He said that he will stop uranium exports because U.S. Needs that for their nuclear plants. But it's not as high a dependency. Russia is
presumably there
46%.
Are certain stockpiles,
right.
So this shortage would not hit the United States for for quite a while.
Right. They do have a strategic supply. But it's like the OPEC. If you do it once, then no one will trust you again. So I think that Russia has been kind of signaling that that is a possibility, also as a sign of warning or to show that they have some other leverage.
Do you believe that the Russians would target nuclear plants in Ukraine and have another Chernobyl?
Well, we've seen that. They've taken
over Zaporizhia.
So yeah. I think, and all of the nuclear dust has been moved around, so their own troops are suffering from that. And if there should be any tactical nuclear weapons used in Ukraine, that wind would blow right back to Russia. So it would hurt the Russians as well. And Ukraine is a breadbasket, not only for Europe and Russia, but also for the world. So it would have huge implications for Russia's reputation.
All right. So you don't believe on balance that they would use nuclear weapons?
Well, I don't have access to Putin's real estate in his brain, but no one thought he was going to invade Ukraine either.
He denied it literally the day before.
Exactly. And Macron believed him.
Now, let's move on to China and Russia and their cooperation in the world. We don't know to what extent that China will supply weapons to Russia for the war in Ukraine. But certainly they're involved in joint maneuvers at the moment over in the Pacific.
Well, Russia-China cooperation, we saw, was highlighted with the No Limits Agreement signed back right before
Friends
the
forever.
Invasion. Right. And so they meet more than any other people. As soon as Putin was reelected, he went to China. Xi Jinping, as soon as he was, his power was extended, his first visit was to Moscow. So they really are in close cooperation. They both say it's the best cooperation in 300 years. And
to what extent is it a symbiotic relationship that each depends utterly on the other for something?
I think China has much more power than Russia at this point, but it's an important embrace because China needs Russia in the tent. So they might be handcuffed to a corpse, but they'd rather have that corpse, I'm mixing metaphors here,
inside the
tent. Are they
energy handcuffs? Is that what it is?
Are so clever. They diversify all of their energy. So they will never be too dependent on any one country. So Russia is selling them very inexpensive energy. So they're ramping up Russian energy imports. And that also helps Russia's
war effort, continue the war in Ukraine. Revenue coming in. What about strategic vital materials, metals and so on?
So the U.S. has drawn red lines about what they can and cannot export. And China has been careful to do that. But there's growing evidence that it's dual use weapons, they're selling drones and vital chemicals for specific ammunitions. Now, recently, Kirk Campbell, the czar of the Indo-Pacific, has gone to NATO and the EU institutions to say that they have more evidence that China is not just selling dual-use goods, but lethal weapons. So this is a huge red line. This will hurt Chinese banks. And the Europeans, it's very difficult for them because they have a lot of trade dependency on China. So this idea that Russia and China have strategic convergence, that they're actually helping the war in Ukraine, makes it very difficult for Europeans to sit comfortably
now,
with that.
Now, we have seen a number of arrests of people spying on behalf of China, both in Brussels and in America. There's a lesson to be learned from a diplomat called Bernard Boursicot. Who was he?
Bernard Boursicot was a French diplomat based in China. And back in 1964, he started an affair with a Chinese opera singer. And this is a very strange story, which was also turned into a Broadway show and a film called M. Butterfly. So either through willful blindness or naivete, he believed that this person he was with for 20 years had a child, that they had a child together. It turned out to be a Uyghur child, so it looked kind of Chinese and Western. And this relationship carried on until he was discovered to be spying and passing documents from the French embassy to the Chinese Communist Party. So when he discovered that this person he had been having an affair with for 20 years, he said he always had these
liaison in the dark.
In the dark. And he thought it was due to Chinese modesty. So when he found out it was really a man, he allegedly tried to cut his throat while he was in prison.
Okay, so he had this affair and had some sort of sexual activity between himself and this person he imagined to be a woman, when in fact it was a lad all the time.
That's right. So that's why I love that term, boursicoted. So we should use that and not be so naive about these Chinese influence activities. Some of these things are hiding in plain sight.
Now, most developed nations spy. Now, if an American goes to Russia to spy, there could be, you know, you could mistake a Russian for a white American and vice versa, less so maybe an African American going to Moscow to spy. When you get people who are Chinese coming, they're identifiable as, if you like, Chinese. So you'd imagine that spies might be easier to find.
And this kind of broaches on certain sensitivities. No one wants to be called a racist.
Because
no one
we are
wants
culturally
to...
diverse.
Yes. And I think that the Chinese are very, very sensitive to that and say if someone gets it wrong, then they'll be accused of being a racist. But the idea of kind of elite capture, using Chinese influence to capture political people, people from industry, they actually do the lobbying on behalf of the Chinese Communist Party for their own interests.
So you might get someone who works in the parliament, for example, and that has happened. People have been arrested who worked in the parliament. And they're picking up, as you put it, breadcrumbs, morsels of information, which may add up to a bigger and quite exact picture for the Chinese.
Their intelligence activity is unmatched. The linguistic skills necessary to monitor what the Chinese are doing, many European capitals don't have a deep bench on Chinese expertise. So, for example, Zhejiang in China is where they monitor European activities, and some analysts have said they have over 2,000 agents there. So we really cannot match it in Europe.
Yeah, and the Chinese work hard.
Exactly, and they're very motivated. They have a goal.
Now, the question of the police stations, we had one in Dublin. And what was the function of those police stations?
Well, the secret police stations, which I found really shocking, especially here in Ireland, I'm glad to see that they shut it down very quickly. Other countries have taken a lot longer to do that. We call it the United Front Work Department. The Chinese historically are concerned about Chinese business folks who go abroad, make a lot of money. And in history, those people kind of sent money back to China to fuel revolution. So the Chinese Communist Party wants to keep tabs on these people. That's why they established these secret police stations all over the world. And they monitor the diaspora community, which also would include Uyghurs, Tibetans, and anyone who might be disgruntled with the Chinese Communist Party.
I presume they depend on third parties then. I mean, these people who are maybe disaffected are not going to report into the police station, or are they under threat perhaps that something might happen to their family at home?
It almost feels like you cannot resist, you know, don't even try. So wherever you go in the world, we're going to find you. And they have a special code called Operation Fox Hunt, where they search for Chinese, very rich Chinese people, and then they bring them back secretly to China. So the message to the Chinese diaspora community is, wherever you are, we're going to find you. And that's what these Chinese secret Chinese
police
stations...
And do they literally kidnap them from the areas they live in?
Sadly. And one of the most shocking to me was a Chinese billionaire who was at the Four Seasons Hotel in Hong Kong. And then photographers saw him being wheeled out in a wheelchair with kind of a bag on his head. So, and he was brought back to China and tried for corruption. So it doesn't matter how rich you are, you're not safe anywhere.
What sort of apprehensions have there been in Brussels, for example, of people who've been, as I say, hiding in plain sight?
Well, we've had Bernard Krailman, a Belgian senator, who they had been monitoring for quite a long time. So back in December, the front page of the Financial Times, Le Monde, and Der Spiegel, the three top European newspapers on the continent. Ireland has a Times, which is also excellent, but he was front page news, and how he was working not only for Chinese intelligence, but also Russian intelligence. So there's an overlap between China and Russia intelligence agencies.
Now, are these people doing it because they have a love of the Chinese Communist Party, or is it all for cash?
I think it's a bit of both. So, especially in Krailman's case, it seems to be for cash. He was an older man and he was learning how to use Bitcoin. That's how they were paying him. But there are other examples of far-right leaders recently uncovered also in the European Parliament, Maximilian Krah with the AfD. His assistant was tried for not only monitoring the Chinese diaspora community in Dresden, but also for spying within the European Parliament and passing on this information to the Chinese Communist Party.
Yeah. Now, most of what we do in the European Parliament, for example, is there. You can watch it. If you've got a high threshold for boredom and tedium, you can watch the proceedings. So it's what goes on maybe in committees. that sort of stuff.
And what also is not said, so stopping any sort of discussion about Taiwan or Tibet. So taking things off the agenda is also a superpower. And we saw this also happen in the United States in the office of the New York governor. So the ability to stop people meeting with the governor, for example, Taiwanese officials, or not allowing certain things to be discussed, or helping to pave the way for Chinese visitors to meet.
Hmm. Now, you know, you might apprehend the odd human spy, but what about the digital world? I mean, it's probably impossible to combat all the activities, whether it's Russia trying to influence the current U.S. election or China simply keeping an eye on everybody.
Well, we're already in a digital war. We know that. And even here in Ireland for 2 weeks, the National Health Service was under attack and no one had access to those records for 2 weeks. So NATO, all the European governments around all around the world, there's cyber attacks daily. So I think that we have to understand the high level. It's not something that's going to happen in the future. It's actually happening now. And you had mentioned earlier about Russia-China cooperation, even in our neighborhood. So during the NATO summit, we had Chinese soldiers doing maneuvers in Belarus. And that was an important signal. So Belarus and Russia have closer cooperation, and China was doing exercises with Belarus. Now, that's right on the border of the rest of Europe. So I think that this is sending kind of a menacing signal to the rest of us.
I noted in the new commission announced by Ursula von der Leyen this morning that the Baltic states are, you know, they've got some good jobs in the new commission in terms of defense. Is it Latvia has defense or Lithuania? But one or other anyway. So they are very conscious of the threats from the Russian bear.
And very importantly, we have Kallas from Estonia, who will be the high representative. And she has been very outspoken about Russia, but she also has to be focused on China as well. Recently, a Chinese trawler allegedly accidentally dragged an anchor. Anyone in the maritime industry will say you cannot drag an anchor for that long.
Yeah.
And they cut the Baltic pipeline. And so this was kind of a threat to the Balts.
This is what we can do.
And I think that it was the next stop was to St. Petersburg after they cut the pipeline.
So I think that whence they came.
There seems to be Russia-China cooperation on the subsea infrastructure.
And the vulnerability in Ireland then, because we are obviously a digital hub for Europe, we are a link, an important link from the United States for connectivity onto Europe. What should we be doing?
This is something I think everyone is deeply concerned about, especially Washington, D.C. The Irish economy requires that these subsea cables stay intact. And I know it's hard, I know it's difficult, but they need to perhaps invest a little bit more to send ships to at least monitor what the Russians and Chinese are doing when they loiter near those very strategic cables.
Because there is no doubt they are watching us.
Definitely. And then the Arctic is coming into play as well. We see more and more Russia-China cooperation, and that brings Ireland more into the picture as well.
Now, you're speaking at the DLA Piper Transatlantic Summit tomorrow.
That's right.
What is your theme?
Well, we'll be talking about, on our panel, geopolitics. So I'll be speaking about Russia and China.
Okay, just as we have been doing.
And I'm really looking forward to it. They've got a great program set up.
Teresa Fallon, Director of the Center for Russia, Europe and Asia Studies, CREAS. Teresa, thank you very much for joining us on the program.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.